Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, we're here back again. Sorry it's been a while. I've had Christmas and it's been busy and oh, blimey. We've been not around, but we've got some stories for you. Some of it's some old stuff, but actually it's really good stories, so I thought we'd keep them in anyway. And we'll definitely have a photo show next Friday. There's no question that. We'll do it live in the afternoon at 2 o'clock before the Max Show, because we're in here all day next Friday. We've got something cool next Friday as well, which you're going to enjoy. I'll tell you about it when it gets to it. First things first, thanks to everyone who's left a review. I'll read a couple of those out as we go through the show. They were really great. You've all left reviews, which I hadn't realised, quite a few of you, and I hadn't realised that they were there, because the review programme that we get that scrapes all of the reviews for the network wasn't picking up the photo show, unfortunately. So I'm thinking none of you have reviewed it, and some of you have. So thank you very much for those that have. Please, please, please leave us a review, because it makes a world of difference in iTunes, and we'll start popping up the rankings, hopefully, as we go through. Right, so first things first, let's kick it off with the news. First up in the news, then, is something rather exciting. We've got a Fantasy Photo League. Yes, the British Tech Network Fantasy Photo League is here. And you can join in as well if you'd like. And you might think, well, okay, but it's gone now, hasn't it? You know, it's January. It's now February, so why can't we join in? Well, you can. That's the thing. It's going to run every single month, so there's 12 topics. They're already planned out. They've been picked out by people who are in the photo showroom in the Slack room. You don't have to join Slack if you don't want to take part. All you've got to do is send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and you can enter the thing just like everyone else can. There's no problem with that at all. If you're in the Slack room, then you'll get loads more information, and you'll get to speak to a lot of the people who are included in the competition. We've got 15 at the moment, which for the first month I was quite chuffed about. What's happening is we've got the topics already laid out. So January was lines, and we've had a whole pile of entries, which I'll show you next month or next week for the lines category, and there was some really inventive stuff, but this month's February's title is self. Okay, self, s-e-l-f, not shelf as Anders thought it was and sent us a picture of IKEA. Self is a tough one, actually, because one of the rules of the Fantasy Photo League is you can't show a picture of yourself. You can't show any information that would identify who you were, and you can't show anything that would lead someone to understand who you were. So you can't use your spouse, you can't use your kids, you can't use anything where we could possibly identify you as to who you are. It's got to be an image that relates to the topic. So again, there are marks here for who sticks to the topic in what they do, and there are also marks for technical competence and composition and all that usual stuff. So join in if you'd like. Send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll tell you how, or just submit your image for self and you can send it in. If you send a picture of yourself, however, you will be sent away, because you can't do that, okay? It's a completely anonymous system. Now, what's really kind of cool is that everyone gets a vote. Everyone gets three votes, actually, and they can apply those votes to any three images from the competition. When they get those votes in, I then review my own scores of them, which is out of 20. We've got the wonderful Hannah Cousins involved, and she's going to give a score out of 20 as well. And me and Hannah are going to give you some verbal feedback about where we think you're going right and where you're going wrong. So it could be a bit of a learning experience as well. Then you get points for the votes that you gained, and then there's one for my assistant Jake, who's here, and he is going to tell you, give you a mark out of 10 for how close you were to the, or how inventive you were against the topic. So he's applied some marks for people in the lines category to show how close to the ethos of the brief of you must show lines it was included. And we've had some really inventive stuff. People generating lines through light, people generating lines through like school lines, you know, when you did something wrong, that kind of stuff. It's been all over the place. So it's been really, really good. Some wonderful entries, and we'll be feeding back on those as we go through the month. But you can still enter, because there's loads of points available every month, and there's 11 months left to go. So come and join the Fantasy Photo League on BTN, because you will certainly really, really enjoy it. I know just this month we've enjoyed it. It's been great, just the group of us that have had a go. So do join in, please. Like I say, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and you can send in your entries. First thing then, Brides magazine's been in a bit of hot water over Christmas. I can't think why. They published an article that said that if you've got a cameraman that you want to do your wedding, you should ask some simple questions. Ask what camera your photographer uses. And the response in that was, they should say Canon or Nikon, which are the most readily available professional cameras. However, there are professional and amateur cameras in both of these brands. A professional camera should be full format. This means that you can print large-scale prints easily. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that they actually spelt Canon with two N's. There's a picture of it. And what's worst of all is that this was advice coming from a person called Tiffany, which doesn't make you feel doesn't make you feel a great deal of confidence, does it? No. Yeah, they did this. They really did this. So if you turn up to a Hasselblad, or turn up to a wedding with a Hasselblad, then on your bike, sunshine, you're not a professional, clearly. And it's got no P mode on it. So why would you be a professional? No, I totally agree. Also, your photographer should be able to describe their equipment and lenses. And that your photographer should know their low light process very well and should be able to describe how they accomplish their signature night look. I've never taken a wedding picture at night. I'm sorry, maybe I'm funny. I don't take a lot of wedding pictures. I try and avoid them like the plague because I hate weddings. But I don't know. There you go. The other thing that was in there was that Brides magazine also advised their listeners not to feed their photographer. I wonder if that's like a Gremlins thing. If you feed your photographer, he turns from gizmo into one of the weird ones. They've since changed the article. There's a surprise. Jesus Christ. I thought I'd start well. Next story then. The USA is going to take your Instagram account and other social media when you get to the ETSA part of your waiver program. In a move, this goes back before Mr. Trump, it must be said. Please enter information associated with your online presence, says the request on the ETSA part of the waiver program. Collecting social media data will enhance the existing investigative process. No, it won't. And provide DHS greater clarity, Department of Homeland Security, greater clarity and visibility to possible nefarious activities and connections. No, it won't. Goal is to identify potential terrorist threat, which is a crap goal because it won't. Awfully sorry. This is utter bullshit and it's completely stupid. And I've got to say, at the moment, it's a voluntary thing. But if they start questioning me about why I didn't do it, if I didn't do it, and then if they start making it mandatory, I'm sorry, America, you can f*** right off because I'm not coming. Good God. Good God. Donald, sorry, mate, you're losing me here. Next one, a chap called Ricardo Stuckert, yes, he was flying over the Amazon in a helicopter flight and due to a storm he had to go into an area that he hadn't planned to go, but he took some pictures and he found a tribe who've never been contacted before, and this is them. He's been working on a book called Uncontacted Tribes, and he's met a few, but he found this one when he didn't even intend on finding this one. So there you go. It's really kind of cool. He was on the way to another tribe when he got diverted because of the storm, and he found a new uncontacted group. He's probably gone down now, and there's probably a Starbucks there already, but that's the area he found. You can see the little hut there at the bottom of the picture where they were, and they fired arrows at the helicopter because they'd never seen one before. Which I've got to imagine, actually, you know, piss taking aside, if that's the first time you see a helicopter, it's big, it's noisy, it looks awful, it looks like it's swallowed two people or more in the process, and it's not a good experience. And I notice as well, there's a dead parrot in this picture. There was a dead parrot on top of his hut. Good lad, he's going to kill that and eat it. He's killed it already, he's going to eat it later. That parrot is dead, mate. Most definitely that parrot is dead. A group called Owen Birrell and five other models, Andrew and Sean Geaney, they were 20 years old. They went in to do a shoot at a disused Dunlop factory. It was an abandoned warehouse in Manchester. They went in, they took a load of pictures, and it was great. It was for a fashion shoot, and everyone had a wonderful time, until they found the body of 27-year-old Declan Noonan, who'd hanged himself, and instead of reporting it, they carried on with their fashion shoot until they were done, and then they went for pizza at Papa John's down the road, and only 5 hours later did Sean Geaney get a complete pang of guilt when urged to by his girlfriend and decide to call the police. In a statement, he said, "We could have called. We should have called, but we didn't." Andrew added, "Everyone was really shocked. Not so shocked that you couldn't carry on with your photo shoot, clearly, though. And no one was thinking rationally. I think we were concerned because we were trespassing." Yeah. One of the models said the decision to keep shooting was because of being on a light schedule and was collective decision by everyone. No formal charges have been brought against them all, but they bloody should have been. That's disgraceful. Are you still struggling with doing the old manual thing? Because, I mean, we've been talking about it now for a couple of weeks, and we've shown a couple of websites that can help you and that kind of stuff. Well, this place has got just the thing for you. It's an application that runs on your device, iOS or Android. It's made by a company called Wolf in Motion, and they've created this simple app. It's called Magic Hour, and it helps you understand the more advanced elements, if you like, of what you can do in photography. So there's scenes within this world that you can go around, and there's motion that takes place in the world, and you can change the light and all that kind of stuff. And then what you can do is you see the world as it is, and you will then see a virtual camera back. And on that virtual camera back, you can alter the aperture, the shutter speed, and the exposure, and that kind of thing. And you can see what it does to the image. And you can also change your mode setting as well, from aperture priority, shutter priority, and so on. And it shows you what happens to motion blur. It shows you what happens to depth of field as well. And it shows you about all the other things that you can do to work out manual stuff. The depth of field bit, I was quite impressed with. I thought this worked really, really well. That shot there with the telescope was excellently done. Have a mess. It's a great tool. It's a fantastic tool. You've just got to go out there and find it. But it's cool. It's from Wolf in Motion, and it's called Magic Hour. You should be able to find it on your... on your iTunes store, your Android store. And that's the news. There we go. Next up then, it's the gear. So what's been happening in the gear? Well, there's been a lot of stuff come out, and this is gear that we picked up from a couple of weeks ago, but actually it's pretty relevant because some of the stuff is really quite cool. First one then is the Canon new line of printers. It's a Pixma G series. And you're like, well, okay, but everyone's done printers, and printers are done to death, and why on earth would I want one? Well, this is the Pixma G series Mega Tank. The difference with these is that they have built-in open tanks that you can fill with any ink you like. You don't have to have the proprietary stuff that Canon provide. Well done. You will get superior quality inks. Never mind, but you can put whatever you want in these things. What it does to your warranty, I don't know. But these have got built-in tanks rather than cartridges. There's four models. There's the G1200, G2200, G3200, and the G4200. And they are deemed to be, in Canon's eyes, in inverted commas, low maintenance. They don't actually qualify what that means, but they are low maintenance. They have see-through tanks at the front, so you can see what the levels are. That's a great idea, so you're not filling around at the back with a torch. They're cheaper and more efficient and less wasteful to use. That you do have to buy a bottle of the ink, and the bottles of ink aren't huge, I have to say. But they're not bad. Maximum resolution of the printers is 4800 by 1200, which is really, really good. And the prices on them are $250, $270, $300, and $400, respectively. There's no cost for the ink, though, and that's the only thing that bothered me. I like the idea of the ink cartridges, or the ink wells being shown at the front and with the ink that you can pour in, but it doesn't say how long it lasts, and it doesn't say how much they cost, which is the only caveat in my book. If the inks are really expensive, then that's quite a high price for a printer nowadays, but if they aren't too expensive, then that's not bad. That's not bad at all. Quite like that. This is the Sigma 500mm f4. It's fixed at 500mm. You don't get a choice. It doesn't go anywhere with that. And it's $5,999. Now, there's a sharp intake of breath there, I'm sure, at this point, and I don't blame you, I have to say. But the thing to remember is, if you're talking about an f4 500mm lens, they don't come cheap. I mean, this has got a big old bit of glass in the front as well. They're not light. It's over 3 kilos in weight. That $6,000, though, is $3,000 less than the Canon version, and it's $4,500 less than the Nikon version that's available. It looks really well built. It's got this lovely contoured finish to it, which Sigma are doing nicely. They've made this their kind of signature, whereas the beige lens is a big Canon thing. This looks very, very stylish. I like the matte finish to it as well. It's got custom settings, and it's got its own software that is provided so that you can actually dictate the custom settings in it using a USB cable from your computer, which is excellent. It comes with a carbon fiber hood as a token gesture to try and keep the weight down, because all of that 3 kilos is probably the front glass. And apparently it's got really fast autofocus results. It zooms in very quickly, which is one of the things that you struggle with the bigger lenses, especially f4 stuff. Some pictures here that have come up, and they're not bad actually. They're quite sharp, a little bit soft perhaps, but not too bad. And the only thing that I would say is that on a couple of it, particularly in low light, the vignetting was very heavy, the focal vignetting. But generally speaking, I thought they were pretty good. This is the Sphere Pro lens. It looks really weird, doesn't it? But it's absolutely a fantastic thing. This shoots a 360-degree image into your camera. So clearly you can see here, this isn't shooting a 360-degree image pointing straight forwards. This is shooting one around the horizontal plane if you tilt the camera on its back. The setups that they show you in this, so there you go. There's the Nikon camera on the bottom of it, and it's tilted vertically upwards so that the thing is a 360 panorama. It's good. It looks excellent. I mean, it's a real innovative step forwards. I have a parabolic mirror at home in the loft, and it's probably about 3 foot across. It weighs an absolute ton. It only takes Nikon because it's got a Nikon lens in it. And it shoots a 360-degree horizontal image just the same way as this does. It was £10,000 when it was bought. I didn't buy it for £10,000, but when it was brand new, it was bought for £10,000. And it came with a piece of proprietary software that you had to use, which only ran on old Macs, which I've got a copy of on an old Mac, but I haven't got the software copy. But it was a massive thing to pull around, and it was really difficult. This thing's tiny. It's really, really good. It's done for panoramas, and it can do it on work sites and that kind of stuff, and it gives you 360-degree photography, which is great. Absolutely fantastic. The downside then, you're going to go, well, what's the price, Ewan? Well, you can't buy it. This thing is only available for rent. So I don't know how many they've got of them, because probably the production costs are quite high if they've only got a few of them. You rent this thing for 3 days at the moment via their website. It looks great. It only is available in Canon F, Nikon F mount, nothing else. You can use adapters for others, but how that works out in terms of cropping, I'm not entirely sure, and there's no explanations from what I can see looking around. And here's the worrying bit. There's no price on how much it costs you to rent for 3 days. So I'm working on the principle that if you've got to only rent it and not buy it, and there's no costs on the rental on the website, it's probably frigging loads. But well done. A step forward technologically. Absolutely superb. Really enjoyed that. Well done. Are you into your astral photography? Well, so this is a slide-in filter that clips onto your existing lens. It's made for Canon and for Nikon. You just take your existing lens off, and it's not on the front of your lens, it's on the front of your sensor, sorry. So you take your lens off, and then you put this thing over, and you clip it in. There was a question came up about whether this would invalidate your warranty. You can buy loads of clip-on sensors to go on the front of your, or loads of clip-on filters to go on the front of your lenses, your sensors. I looked at one a while ago that would go onto my D6 to stop the what do you call it, the interlacing. So when you look at lines and stuff like that on the video, it interlaces really badly. It's not very good. But it's a fairly minor effect, and the lens I looked at, something was like 500 quid, and it clipped on. It just physically clipped on. So the technology for doing this is out there. This thing clips onto the front of your sensor, and it's to help you with your astrophotography by removing light pollution. Okay. It claims to reduce the effects of artificial lighting by blocking certain wavelengths and intensifying the light spectrums that are naturally present in the night sky. There we go. The frame is made of A2 stainless steel. I don't know why there's a picture of some water floating on it. It's glass, of course it's waterproof, Jesus. And it's non-magnetic to the interference of the camera components, so it shouldn't cause you any problems. Again, I don't know why the water's there, but there we go. It's made of shot glass, S-C-H-O-T-T, not alcohol glass, and is the same glass that's used in Carl Zeiss lenses, so it should be good quality. Here's some of the results then. There's a picture of the camera with it on. Here's some of the results. That one, it really was good. It really cut down on the pollution levels that are out there. That one, not as impressed with that one, because I've got to say, I've taken the shot on the left quite readily, and I've got better results than the one on the right just by adjusting the white balance and thinking about the blue tones that are in there, adding saturation to the blues and reducing saturation on the yellows. Most light pollution is sodium-based lighting from towns, so it yellow is a good one to filter out of the spectrum in raw. I wasn't impressed with the last few images, but I was impressed with that first one. I think that made a real clear difference to it. It's stunning, it's gorgeous, it's $208 if you want it. You get an 18 month warranty on the glass and a lifetime warranty on the frame. I don't get that, I have to say. I'd have thought the unit itself would be enough, but it should work, allegedly. It should work. We'll have to wait and see. There we go. This is the Camera Zoom Lens. So, what's special about this then? Well, this is a zoom lens attachment that goes on the outside of your iPhone 7 Plus. It's a case that you have to put onto your iPhone 7, but you get these little frog eye macro and zoom attachments that go on the front. It combines with the phone's wide-angle lens existing to give you like a fisheye effect, which you can then zoom in and out on. And also it gives you a macro facility, which in the video that's on there, the macro facility looks absolutely excellent. I was really, really impressed with it. The little things, the two lenses that come on that slip into the frame, they look like minions, I have to say, black minions. They seem to work. The video looks absolutely awesome. There's a picture here of a zoom in on a small coin, and it was really impressive. And then what's quite interesting is it gives you that macro facility so you can get right up close. And then, of course, you've got the zoom on the lens as well. So you get an optical zoom up to 2x with the macro on top of that. You can get some really, really close level stuff. So it's really, really good. I was dead impressed. $45 if you want to buy one. Okay, well, you get two lenses for that, and you get the case as well. And the case is pretty sturdy, so you know, you can pay $30 for a decent case from Apple, so there's nothing wrong with that. And you get these little two sets of lenses that slip into it. $45. I'm sitting thinking, oh, I've already bought one. Why am I kidding? As soon as I saw the story, I went and bought one. So it's on the way from China. It's cost me 60 ducks, all told, including shipping. I'm probably going to end up getting shafted by the Royal Mail when it comes with 10 quid on top of that just for admin charges, for charging me the £2.70 or whatever it is for customs excise. We'll wait and see, but I've bought one already. I'll let you know when it gets here and how good it is, but I'm hopeful. The video looked awesome. The video didn't look like they cheated or anything like that, so well done to them. That's the Camera, K-A-M-E-R-A-R. And you're thinking, okay, I'd love one of those, but where do I go, Ewan? This is the only show on the network that has show notes. Yes, we actually have show notes. All the notes that me and Ian make as we do this, we then put them in a PDF and we give you a link in the show notes or in the webpage at britishtechnetwork.com/photo, and you can download the show notes and have all the links for all the stories that we've looked at everywhere. There we go. Simple as that. Dead easy. Absolutely dead easy. Thanks to Ian Lewis as well, because without Ian, we wouldn't be doing the photo show again at all, although we've been a bit lame the last couple of weeks, I do admit. But Ian helps out, and today when I finish this, I'm going to clear down the dock, and Ian is going to go back in, and he's got a pile of stories he wants to put in. And there'll be a photo show next Friday. I promise. We'll be back onto a regular schedule now for a bit. Cool. So let's go for it then. It's your questions. We've had a question from Martin, who's asked a question about landscapes. I'm not going to do it this week, Martin. And the reason being, let Ian have a look at it, because he's a better landscape photographer than I could ever dream of being. So please wait for him to have a look, and then we'll cover yours next week. It's the first one, I promise, mate. But we've had a few others. We've got a couple in reserve as well, but we could do with more photo questions for the next few weeks. If you've got one, then send it to britishnetwork@gmail.com and just mark it photo show on the subject heading, and you can send one in. First question then. Hi, Ewan. Great to have the photo show back. You're welcome, mate. Please, can I ask, what was the software you mentioned that was pretty good for editing, but not up to Photoshop standards? Regards, Mark. It was Affinity Photo. That comes from a company called Serif. You may remember them. I don't know if they did Corel. No, they didn't do Corel Draw, because that was Corel. And it was $49, £49, something like that, I think. Yeah, £49 in the UK. You can get it for Windows or for Mac. It's good, don't get me wrong. I had a go with it, and I used it, and it wasn't bad. I quite enjoyed it. Was it as intuitive as Photoshop? No, but then I've been using Photoshop for the best part of probably 12, 15 years. So, you know, no, it doesn't fit in with my workflow particularly as easily. Photoshop have put their prices up this week, so they're going to go from $8.78 or whatever it is, or $8.59, Ian will pick me up on that, to £10.10. But, I mean, that's not even a cost of coffee, is it? I'll go to rugby on Sunday to see me beloved Wasps, and I'll drink two pints of beer, and it'll come to more than the cost per month for Photoshop. So I think it's virtually nothing in terms of cost. Affinity Photo is good. It's all right. It'd do for the amateur, don't get me wrong. But at $49, the thing that will get me then is then obsolescence. Are they going to try and sell you a version of that every year? And my view is, I think you probably find the next update to OS 10, maybe the next one after that, after 2 years, it's like, oh, look at that. It doesn't work. Do you want the next one? There's no... there has to be an upgrade path for this, and there has to be an upscale path and a resell on it. Otherwise, they don't make any money if they make something that's really good and runs forever on OS 10. That would be my cynicism that goes along with Affinity. But whereas with you with Photoshop, you get upgrades constantly. And I do love the Photoshop package. I think they do a brilliant job with it, and it's excellent. I can't complain. And the other thing I want to give them kudos for, actually, is that we've had Brexit now for 9 months, and we've had a shit exchange rate, and they haven't put the prices up for 9 months. So well done to Adobe. I'm fine with that. Second question, Ewan, you've often said there are no bad cameras anymore, so what's the difference between the cheap DSLRs and the £5,000 DSLRs? I don't get it. Tom. Okay, so pixel size for a start. So if you go for the low end, you get a £200 Nikon 70D or whatever it was, 50D or the real low one, D50. You'll probably pay £200 for that on Amazon, and what you're going to get is a crop sensor for a start, not a full frame sensor, because everyone gags for full frame sensors. I couldn't care less. Fill the frame with interest. You've got issues with the crop factoring on your lenses, but generally it's okay. It's not too much of a problem. So you're going to get similar numbers of pixels, but they're going to be cramped down into a smaller sensor size. So quality has to take a hit there, or it doesn't, you know, it can't not. This thing's going to take great pictures even at £200, but you're going to get significantly better pictures at pixel for pixel size out of a full frame sensor at the same resolution. So 18 megapixel crop frame, 18 megapixel full frame, your full frame will give you a better quality because the physical sensor size is bigger. More light can get in, it will be much better. As a result of the fact that more light gets in easily, one of the other things you're going to get with the full frame is you're going to get increased light sensitivity. So that means that your 800 ISO in your £200 camera is going to crap out very, very quickly and start to get grainy. Maybe 800, 1600, certainly when you hit 3200, it's going to be pretty nasty. When you get into the £5,000 camera mark, if I was spending a few thousand now on a 5D or something like that, or a 5D Mark IV, I would be looking at probably expecting it to do really, really well in terms of grain up until 6,400 or beyond. You're never going to get that out of a £200 Nikon at the bottom end or a £200 Canon at the bottom end. They'll start to crap out from 800, maybe 1,600 if you're lucky, but they're still brilliant for the value. You know, pound for pixel, you're getting way more at that bottom end than you are at the top end. In terms of fitting for lenses and stuff, they're about equal. You're going to get some waterproofing, certainly at the high end. You're not going to get any waterproofing in the low end. You take it out in the rain, you run the risk it could crap out very easily. The bayonet fittings, sometimes they can come a bit loose. Sometimes as well, you can find that the cheaper cameras, they won't connect properly to off-brand lenses. So if you get a Nikon body and stick it with a Tamron lens, you'll get error connection messages that will come up as well. It doesn't make them less cameras, you know, in terms of it doesn't make them less cameras, but you know what I mean? They're still good cameras. There are no bad cameras anymore at the bottom end. If you're sitting there, I've got 200 quid left over after I've decorated the kitchen and I had some money left by, the wife doesn't know about it, I can buy myself a new camera. That was a terribly sexist thing to say, I may know. But if you've got 200 quid kicking around, you could buy yourself a 200 quid DSLR and it'd be okay. You'll take some great pictures with it and you can get yourself the dirt cheap f1.8 lens for another 80 quid and it'll still take fantastic pictures. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Here's the thing, right? I don't have any Nikon lenses, so I will buy a Nikon, so you know I'm not cheating, and I will put two images side by side, one with a 5D and one with a Nikon with the same lens on them, 50mm, and we'll see which of them is which and whether you can tell the difference in terms of the 100% crop and that kind of stuff. There'll be subtle differences, but you'll be close. Next question, question three. Hi, you and my father recently passed away. I'm sorry to hear that. That's Gary. Do apologise, mate. That's not good. And I've got all of the 35mm slides that he took from when he first met my mother through to the childhood and probably up to about 1990. Bloody hell, your dad shot a lot. There are boxes and boxes of them, and I'm scared to count them. And actually, I know how, because then I'll actually know how many there are. There could be thousands. I don't want to lose them. Do you have any suggestions on how I can go about preserving them, using them, scanning them, etc.? Regards, Gary. So I have, and it's in my my cupboard in my bathroom here at the studio, an Epson V350, and I bought that to do slide scanning. And my dad had got tons and tons of slides left over from when I was a kid myself, and he said, I want to do the slide scanning, so I showed him how to use it, and for an 85-year-old, he did okay. I didn't get many tech support calls, and it was fairly simple. You put it in, you close the lid, you hit scan, and it did it straight to the software, and then you did file, save as, and it worked, and it ran on my mum's old iMac, which my mum's iMac was got to be 10 years old, so it did really, really well. That scanner now is the V600 from Epson, and it scans five slides at once. The 350 only did two slides at once, so the 600 now does five slides at once, and it does it very, very well. The resolution for scanning is up to 9,600 dpi. Which is brilliant, really, really good. One of the jobs that you're going to have to do, which can be a pain in the arse, is taking them out of the frames to get it to lie flat properly. You will get better results if you do that, but the thing with the V600 is you could put the frame in, so it's just a case of loading the slide up like you were loading it into a cassette and then shoving it through. 200 quid for those, 215 quid on Amazon, so that's a really good buy, really good value, and the V600 does 9600 dpi, so it's really, really good quality. Just set yourself a target of doing, don't pick thousands, just do 50 a weekend. That's 10 passes. 50 will get you through in a few months, but you'll slowly do it and it won't seem like an onerous task. I would say one of my big bits of advice is break it down into something that's small and manageable. The other thing you can do is have a family slideshow in the evenings. What's the name of them? Braun Novamat. They do that on Amazon. It's about 400 quid, but it's a cartridge slide projector, and you load all your slides up, and you can sit and flick it through, and it projects them on the wall. That'd be great, wouldn't it? You know, think of all the stuff that you could have, in a few months' time when the pain of your dad's passing is not so bad, and you can all sit around, you can all have a good laugh and learn and go through them all. You didn't say with your mum's outlived him or not, but she could sit and explain what's in the pictures as well. That would be a fantastic family night, wouldn't it? Really, really cool. And then your other option is to send them away for slide scanning. Here's the problem with that. You lose them in the post. It does happen. Be careful. You could lose them with a courier just as easily as Royal Mail, just as anyone else. You'd have to deliver them personally to feel that you'd know about them. I wouldn't want to send them off to a website. The other problem you get with that is they're 40 pence a slide-ish, something like that. 36 to 40 pence a slide is what I looked at online. That's really expensive, especially if you've got thousands and thousands to do that your dad's shot, and it sounds like there are lots of them. I think your best bet, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, is to sit there and go through all of them yourself, buy a slide scanner, and just do 50 to 100 a weekend. Just do 10 or 20 passes, 10 a day. That's all you have to do. 10 passes a day, 50 slides a day, and you'll get through them before you know it. It'll be really, really cool. Categorising them and having fun with them and putting them into places and wondering who they are and that kind of stuff will all come later. And whether you got them back to front or not, that'll be fun. But again, Lightroom and that kind of stuff are good for helping you with categorisation, even photos. Photos is incredibly powerful on Mac. Give that a go if you possibly can. That'll be helpful. There you go. Hope that helped, Gary. That was the photo show. There we go. It's all done and dusted. Don't forget our Fantasy Photo League. If you want to join in, all you've got to do is send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. February's title for the assignment is Self, S-E-L-F, Self, but you cannot show a picture of yourself, your family, or anyone else that could identify you, or anywhere that could identify your location, that kind of stuff. So Ian Lewis is in the competition, and he's doing rather well this month. He's had a few scores, but he's banned from taking landscape images. That's his handicap. That's his one arm tied behind his back. So there you go. There's loads and loads of fun that we had. We've got a whole year of this coming up, which will be absolutely brilliant. As I said, the wonderful Hannah Cousins is doing some commentary as well, so you'll get some information back about how you can improve. Do join us. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. God, it's good to be back.